Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Back for hour two, a Wildcat Insider. Mitch Fortner, Trey Coverdale, and AJ Shaw. Phone number is 785-537-1350 if you want to call in. It's the penultimate Wildcat Insider for this school year. One more to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be next Monday when Wyatt will be back with us. We got the NFL draft coming up next week, so we have our annual draft here on the show coming up as well. That'll be a week from Thursday, as it'll that's the first round, right? First round of the draft.
Yes.
Is Thursday. Where is the draft this year?
Detroit.
Oh God.
It's part of why there are only 15, I think, tops of the expected first rounders that will be in attendance.
Are they having it at Ford Field?
I think
is
so.
Somewhere else?
They may be putting it down at Cabo Hall and some different places.
Oh, Cabo Hall. There's a convention center right next to Cabo Hall. And so I've told you before, I used to be in a group called Leo's Club.
Yes.
And it's like Lions Club for minors or whatever. And I used to go on all these trips. And the first one was to Detroit. And the international convention was at Cabo Hall. But it was in the convention center next door. It wasn't actually in Cabo Hall. And the only security you could find for that building was at every door of Cabo Hall so people didn't try to get in. And still to this day, I don't understand why they needed all that security, because it looked like a dump.
Right.
Is it still up? Is it around?
I believe it is, yeah. Just taking a look here. Hart Plaza will host all draft experience items. Okay. Yawn.
Yeah, this is going to be the most boring.
I mean, you went NFL from Vegas 2 years ago to Kansas City to Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to know, like, because Nashville, Vegas, Kansas City were the last three, right?
Yes.
And you had people for days, like, you're on stage, you're looking out, you just see nothing but a sea of humanity. Will Detroit be that way? I'm sure a lot of people will show up, but it's just not a great. And the Lions were good this year, but are people going to show up like they have for the previous handful of destination drafts, now that we're away from Radio City Music Hall in New York City?
Yeah, Hart Plaza and the area that is to be known as Cadillac Square.
They should get Tim Allen to like put on the old Lions sweater.
Yes.
He used to wear at,
yes,
Home Improvement.
Yes.
And have him announce a draft pick.
Yeah, that would be solid. Absolutely.
Who else from Detroit?
Well, you got to have a Barry Sanders sighting. I mean, that's just going to happen.
Barry Sanders for sure. I can't think of any other celebrities.
Calvin Johnson.
Me. Yeah. Megatron.
So from Campus Martius to Hart Plaza, and additional events in Beacon Park, Capitol Park, Grand Circus Park, Harmony Park, and along Woodward Avenue.
Yeah, when it comes to the actual sites in promoting Detroit, there's nothing to watch.
Yeah, it's...
You're just in for the picks.
Pretty much.
That's it. We have Royals baseball coming up tonight from Chicago, South Side. Kansas City Royals and the terrible Chicago White Sox in action with a pregame at the top of the hour, 6 o'clock, and first pitch is at 6:40. How often, AJ, would you go to the South Side for a game? Did you stay away from the South Side? You just stuck with Wrigley Field?
I went to one game. I've been to one game on the South Side. It is not as nice a ballpark as Wrigley is. And there was a story out in the Sun-Times the other day, which is the second major newspaper in that town, about Jerry Reinsdorf has kind of a shady guy trying to help him finance his new stadium.
Kind of. Sorry. Shady guy and Jerry Reinsdorf just go together.
True.
Always has been.
All right, let's move on. Let's get to the big portal news today, and that is for K-State men's basketball. Portal get number two for the Cats is somebody I'm a big fan of. Illinois-Chicago wing, 6'5", from East St. Louis, Missouri, transferring in after being with the Flames for 2 years, will be C.J. Jones. And there's a lot of reasons why I like him. His numbers last year, 11.5 points, 3.5 rebounds. He's a great passer at 5 assists per game this past year. He shot 37.8% from three on 2.5 attempts per game. He can slash to the hoop. He loves the floater from 15 feet. He is really good at squaring up. That's why, you know, something that's really maybe looked past when you look at the highlight reel is he better drive if he's going to get a floater off. He's really good at squaring up and getting directly in, getting the sights on the rim. And when he puts those floaters up, it doesn't look like just poor percentage shots. He knows how to get up in the air and make it look good. The second half of last year is where he really shined. In the final 17 games of last season, he averaged 14 points. He was much better from three, just under 41%. He had a 16-point, 14-assist game against Drake. And he joins Doug McDaniel, a point guard out of Michigan, as the two recruits for this 2024 class out of the portal, and of course going to join David Castillo as a high school signee, a part of the 2024 class. He will have 2 years of eligibility remaining, like Doug McDaniel. Power six, teams that were interested in bringing him in include Creighton, Illinois, Xavier, and he already had relationships with guys on the team. He used to play basketball against Dede Ames, and he was on the same high school basketball team as McCaleb Rich.
Okay.
Does K-State have an opportunity or what to really build a team that you're set up with for the next couple of years? Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of the backcourt. First of all, you have all three freshmen. As for now, things are still good. They're going to be returning for next year. So you're building better basketball players there. You're going to have some longevity out of a couple of three freshmen, rather. And then what you're building with guards is you have now a deep rotation at point guard, or potentially a very deep rotation at point guard. Doug McDaniel, Dede Ames, and David Castillo, triple D.
I love the fact also that Chicago is becoming a nice focus recruiting-wise. There's a lot of talent in Chicago that seems to go under the wire, if you will, under the radar. And this is a prime example of some of that in the past, where he wound up at UIC rather than getting a look at another opportunity and played himself into a look here by K-State.
You know, I just now, as I was rattling off the names, I realized all three of the point guards, their first names start with the letter D, and then you mentioned Chicago, and then Dejuan Gordon popped to my mind, who was, you know, there at the tail end of the Bruce Weber era and the COVID year, and he like bounced around to two or three different programs. I think his eligibility is done now. I'm not sure. I would not be surprised if he's still out there somewhere playing some college ball, but I don't know what he's up to now. But anyway, so when you mix in Doug McDaniel, when you mix in C.J. Jones, just right there, those two bring me to a new level of optimism in what this program can really be in the backcourt this next year. Do you have something, AJ?
He is actually still playing. He was at the University of Texas at Arlington this year.
Dejuan Gordon, really? So that would have been his fourth stop, I think.
Correct.
I think previously he went to Missouri, and then I believe he ended up at New Mexico State. And then this last year he played at Arlington?
Correct. University of Texas at Arlington.
Well, he's got to be done then. I think his eligibility is up then.
Yeah, he's a grad student. That's what his class says.
Yeah, so that was his last year of eligibility. So what did he average?
About 13 points per game.
Okay. What was his three-point shooting?
Let me look here. Give me a sec.
I did not expect to talk about DeJuan Gordon today.
31%.
Okay, yeah. Well, obviously what stands out about these two recruits is that they can shoot the three. Mm-hmm. They've both played 2 years of college basketball. Obviously, C.J. Jones at UIC, and then you had at Michigan, Doug McDaniel as a point guard. Two very solid playmakers. Doug McDaniel's 5'11". Then you get more size at the wing with C.J. Jones, who stands 6'5". You put their shooting numbers together from three, their 2 years, and add them all up together, and they come through with 36% shooting from three-point range. That's number one that stands out to me. About now you have some options, it feels like, when you mix in, if you do get Arthur Kaluma back. You know, Day-Day Ames mm-hmm. wasn't solid throughout the year, but he definitely flashed from three, and I think he finished 33%
yes.
from three-point range this past year. Arthur Kaluma wasn't too bad. And then you mix in Doug McDaniel, mm-hmm. who has shot 36.3% over his 2 years. You had 37.8% this past season from C.J. Jones. And all of a sudden, guys, you have some three-point shooters. This comes after a year that K-State was dead last in the Big 12 in shooting the three. Dead last at 31.8%. And you'll notice a lot of good teams have a couple of guys that shoot 36% or better from three-point range. The first team that comes to mind, if I remember my stats correctly, was Houston. Houston had a couple of shooters. They weren't exactly deep with three-point shooters, but they had a couple of guys that were elite enough for Houston. That's number one that stands out to me. Number two is passing. Because you now have two more players you're adding to your roster. McDaniel, 4.7 mm-hmm. assists per game. C.J. Jones, 4.8 assists per game. K-State, I mean, offensively, there was just, I know they had their flashes, and I don't really put a lot of this on Tyler Perry, but at times there was just too much standing around with the basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Where it just felt like the five-out offense just didn't quite work with this group without a Quez Glover and without – that's another name we haven't even brought up.
Right.
Quez Glover, if he does stick around and play his and get that last year of eligibility and stick around here, you just add to that depth of point guard or playing at the two for K-State if you're Quez Glover, if he does decide to stick around. But now, you know, Day-Day Ames, despite limited play there for a while, for a lot of the season, still averaged a couple of assists per game. He and Arthur Kaluma would be your two players returning that are your best passers mm-hmm. on the team, just a couple of assists per game. But now you have two really strong guys that can pass on an elite level. High numbers. Having that is extremely important. And you have a Doug McDaniel that is used to playing point guard. You have a C.J. Jones that's used to playing his position. Tyler Perry was forced into a point guard mm-hmm. position last year. Did, I thought, a pretty solid job of passing the basketball. But now you have guys that are that can play their position, that they're used to. They're both of them can score at all three levels. They can slash, they can catch and shoot, or they can facilitate. They can do the three important things that you need your guards to do. I get a lot of optimism on where this backcourt is right now. It should be a big step up from this previous year.
It was the recognition of what needed to be accomplished in terms of growth, given last year's struggles, especially the struggles offensively that this team had. And passing was a huge part of that. And now you see the opportunity here with guys that are athletic and can score the basketball that open up the opportunity then to be able to spread the floor much more than what they did this year.
And another great part about this is, you know, they've all proven, and again, it depends on, you know, if I right now it does feel like Arthur's coming back. I'm sure he's going to test the NBA waters. Just we'll see how that plays out. And then who else gets added out of the portal. But, you know, C.J. Jones, who was the guy at Illinois-Chicago, is not expected to be the number one guy, of course. You know, it on any given night, you have a playmaker to go out and get you a basket. And I think that's very important. And I think I can, you know, I can speak for myself, obviously. I don't know how you feel, but now you have multiple options that if you need the big shot, you have guys that are more reliable. There was just too much down the stretch of this past season where they did have the open shooters and the open shots were not being made.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been a solid job of recruiting to now correct that. These guys have a lot of experience. It's not as much as what Jerome Tang and company were wanting last year. I mean, he talked about, what was it, 90 games or something like that, at least. Well, CJ has played 62, and Doug has played 60. And they have started a ton of those games.
One of the aspects of that, though, too, remember, you're also talking, though, that we're now starting to get into that phase where guys don't have the COVID year as much.
Right.
So that plays a role in that you're seeing the experience number not reach the 90 level.
But that's another point. That's another part of my point here. Yes, we're done with the COVID year with these two individuals. They both still have 2 years of eligibility remaining. And just about everybody I've mentioned, for the most part, I mean, I'm talking about the backcourt here, with who you'll have at point guard, with the exception of Quez if he still, you know, decides to stick around. But C.J. Jones, R.J. Jones, David Castillo, I mean, they still have, if this does turn out to be a special year for the backcourt, guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly everybody is going to be back for another year. So it does feel like K-State, if things work out, which optimism is, you know, in my body is telling me it could be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they got some better shooters, could be a fun ride in the backcourt for the next couple of years. But again, I don't like to get it too ahead of myself. It's just a gut feeling right now. The numbers are adding up that, hey, I mean, not very many teams out there in the country have two guys that are coming in or had been on the roster a previous year that shot over 35-36% from three.
Right.
It's just not too common.
Well, and you mentioned for the next couple of years, and I think that that's a big part of this as well. You're seeing this be beyond just a one-year opportunity with some guys and actually building a roster that will have some future opportunity as well.
But now I think the focus now is on a big. And who can they get? Because they've had two guys visit. I mean, just this past weekend, you had Baba Miller in, who's from Florida State. He's 6'11". He's very athletic. I don't know how much of a hurry he's in, but he hasn't made his decision yet from far as we know. And then Umar Ballo from Arizona, who is one of the best recruits in the class when it comes to the portal. I think On3Heaven is the second best player in the portal. He is scheduled to visit K-State this weekend. If they can get him, man, that's a huge get. But also remember, Terrace Reed out of Michigan has also visited. And his decision still remains up in the open. Out there for to be made. Let's take a break. Coming up next, we'll jump back to football. We're going to hear from the Golden Boy himself. Sunshine Avery Jones spoke to the press on Saturday, and those highlights are next.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello? Are we on? Okay, well, I'm on now. Got some breaking news.
Oh?
Avery Johnson is the guy now, if you haven't heard, ever since December. Ever since, Well, Will Howard, it says, listen, guys, I'm out. Tired of this freshman taking my time.
Who is MV?
Mason Voth.
Oh, that's
I think
I'm
it's
an
one
idiot.
Of Mason's.
I didn't realize that was Mason's bed.
Yeah, something Mason threw in there once upon a time. typically not a fan of having lyrics on beds, but I'll let this one slide because it's a good groove. Let's get to Avery Johnson. Spoke to media on Saturday. He's now the guy in charge of the offense. Here's Avery.
It's been like a really good feeling, and just being able to have a lot of those guys look to me and be able to count on me just the same way I look at them and then count on them. It's just it's no added pressure or anything. Everybody has their job that they do each and every Saturday, so it's just going out and continue to execute that.
And by the way, Avery, you know, part of that being in charge and being the guy on offense is respecting or getting that respect from the teammates.
I feel like a lot of the guys respect me and trust me, and it's just kind of just how I go about my everyday life. And just, you know, it doesn't just come out here and just start barking out orders. It starts when I first got here, just putting my head down and working in the weight room, coming out here during team runs and just giving it my all and earning their respect that way, so that when it was time for me to bark out an order like it is now, guys respect it, guys listen, and then whenever I do make that mistake or whenever I, you know, get down or fumble up a little bit, some guys will come to pick me up too.
You know, it's just something about, you know, when an athlete is really, really, really good at what he does and is already getting recognized by the fans and he hasn't even stepped on campus yet, you kind of already get the respect in a way. You know, and maybe, you know, the quarterback room kind of sees that and takes it as a threat a little bit, you know, one, and it happens once in a while. And I totally understand that. But, you know, I'm sure the respect that Avery has wasn't necessarily the hardest to earn. But Avery seems like that kind of guy where even though it wasn't the hardest to earn, he'll still earn it in a freshman kind of way. You know, still being a freshman, knowing his role as his age, you know, He won't be the biggest leader in the locker room necessarily when it comes to his age, but he's still going to earn that respect. But also when you're QB1,
right,
you automatically are going to get a right amount of respect, especially if you're good. Now, if you sucked, maybe not so much. But that's not who Avery is. This is some information I think people are wanting to know. Get some exact numbers on that because, listen, I remember when this certain picture came out, and you could easily tell that Avery put on some weight. I think some people fat-shamed him.
Right.
I was like, listen, I had stood next to this guy a couple of times. He was really skinny. Him putting on some weight was going to be pretty noticeable. Listen, the guy's not fat. He is just bulked up a little bit.
A little puffy.
I wouldn't even say that. He's just put on, he's bulked up a little bit.
I mean, yeah. Keeping in mind, we all had our say about dad bod Patrick Mahomes as well this year.
Listen, you don't have to be the most jacked guy in the world to be a good QB. We all know that.
True.
You know, Josh Allen isn't exactly the most in shape. Kirk Cousins isn't the most in shape. And we damn well know, like you just said, Patrick Mahomes is dad bod central.
Rest in peace, Hefty Lefty.
But he's still putting on weight. That journey's not done yet.
Weigh 190 right now. I came back, finished the season probably around like 181, came back in the winter and then put on, I was a little bit above 190, dropped about 190 right now, but trying to get over the 200-pound range, but we have good sports science, good nutrition here, great strength staff, so no doubt in my mind I can get to that point.
I brought up a follow-up question of like how much is he eating day to day?
3 meals a day, and then snacking in between those meals. I would say it's probably anywhere between 4,000 to 5,000 calories, depending on if it's a run and a lift day, if it's an off day, how much I'm burning that day.
Okay, so after hearing all that, he's still trying to put on another 10 pounds or so, trying to get over 200. I did some research and I found this sample diet. It's from Michigan State for somebody in his position, a quarterback, and somewhere around his weight, on to put on weight. What is an example of 5,000 calories? What is an example of what Avery might be eating every day to put on this weight and get his body right for 15 games? Because that's the goal, right? Have him ready to go, healthy, limit the hits, as in making the right decisions if you're running out of bounds or whatever, not taking the big hit as much as you possibly can. What are you eating day to day right now? So here's an example of what he might be eating. Now, I'm not going to go through all the amounts and measurements, but I'm just going to say what he could possibly be eating because this is a very similar diet that Michigan State once used and published. So first of all, he's potentially eating seven different times a day. Breakfast could be oatmeal with brown sugar, an English muffin with jelly, and a banana. That's breakfast.
Okay.
A snack before lunch could be yogurt, granola, a granola bar, and Gatorade. Lunch, grilled chicken breast, rice, mixed vegetables, breadsticks with butter. That's lunch.
Okay.
There are two snacks before dinner, according to this diet. The first snack is apple with cheese crackers and fruit punch. The second snack would be honey bunches of oats, 1 cup, and skim milk.
Skim. Not whole. Okay.
No, we're skimming it up.
Interesting.
For dinner, lean ground beef with pasta, marinara sauce, garlic bread, romaine lettuce, and ranch dressing. And then there's a snack after dinner.
Of course.
Grilled cheese. There's the skim milk again. Ooh. But mix in a little Hershey's chocolate syrup for good measures to get the calories in there.
Grilled cheese as a snack.
That adds up to 5,026 calories. So that is an example of what Avery could potentially be eating every day. To put on that way. I'll be honest with you. That's a lot of boring.
Yeah, that's kind of bland. Yeah.
A lot of boring that you may get tired of eating every day. And I used to be in really good shape, and I used to do the meal prep, and I'm trying to get back into that routine. It's just tough after you've been out of it for a while to try to get back in it. And what's especially tough, I think the toughest part about it is the meal prep and trying to eat healthy and the same thing every day. Because I'm not exactly a gourmet chef. I don't have the opportunities that they have with Sodexo and the meal plans and eating, the whatever they call it. I can't remember where all the athletes go to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Eating the same bland stuff every day sucks. It is the worst part about dieting. It makes it way too easy after you eat the same thing for a couple of days, chicken or whatever, and rice and mixed vegetables. It makes it too much easier to get in the mind. I'm so hungry. I'm just going to go eat fast food for one meal. I've been good for 2 days. It's one meal.
Before I get texted as a reminder, keep in mind Monica is going to have the 3 months of not being able to eat solid food.
Oh. So is it a lot of like milkshakes?
Yeah. Yeah. We have invested in an ice cream / popsicle maker.
Okay.
You're getting the ideas here, yeah.
But there's like, you still want to get the things you need to stay healthy, all your nutrients, mm-hmm. your protein, things like that. So, I mean, there's options, obviously.
Yeah. We also own a Ninja blender, so, some things may be odd texture, we'll put it that way.
Oh, that could be difficult. That doesn't sound like fun.
No.
Because if you're talking like veggie, like juices.
Mm-hmm.
That could get real gross.
Mm-hmm.
Could get real gross. Let's get some more Avery stuff in here. It's Avery Johnson, quarterback for the Cats. Where he feels like he has improved the most this spring.
Pocket presence and accuracy. Big thing that I did a lot previously is just kind of getting out of the pocket too early and just trying to work on this spring, kind of feeling stuff happen around me, sitting in there tall and delivering throws and just being able to make plays from within the pocket. And then just use my God-gifted abilities whenever I am forced outside of the pocket.
Yeah, I think that really pointed out to me last year. AJ Happy Feet would show up once in a while and flush the pocket a little bit too early when he didn't need to settle things down. That is, I'm sure he's easily able to correct that.
But let's be perfectly honest. Name a high school quarterback pushed into a starting role at a Power 5 that doesn't suffer from that.
Yeah, I think it comes with the territory.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure nerves are involved, also wanting to make the play, wanting to make the right play, like not get sacked.
And it's the step up.
Well, step up in the park. When a quarterback, and I want to give credit to Carter Aslan for Manhattan High, because that was a big part of his game that he really improved on this past season, calling Manhattan High football, is that he was a junior in high school. And when you can sense the pressure, when you know what you got coming to your blind side, stepping in the pocket, up in the pocket to go make a play or go make a throw, I mean, that is a grown-up move to be able to make those kind of plays.
I meant the step up overall talent-wise, though.
Oh, I thought you said step up in the pocket.
Yeah, no. Like, step up, the step up from high school to...
That still all works.
Yeah, valid point, yes.
Let's see here. What stands out about Connor Riley now being the OC?
He never goes a meeting without saying, you know, how much he cares about us and how grateful he is to be in front of us and be our offense coordinator. And a lot of guys wouldn't necessarily say that. And just the way he's kind of expanded and broadened our playbook, and we're still going to run the ball at a high level. He wants to throw it at a high level as well.
Let me replay real quick the first part of that answer.
He never goes a meeting without saying, you know, how much he cares about us.
It automatically brought a question to my head that I wish I had an opportunity this spring to once again ask Connor Riley. It is kind of like it's kind of making light of a interesting situation because it was so funny leading up to the bowl game. And Troy, you may remember this, that like a Cooper Beebe or an offensive lineman would mention that practices leading up to the bowl game, it was different because Connor Riley wasn't on their case as much. It wasn't the same. Because he can be a little, turned up, a little intense sometimes. He's a coach. Totally get it. It's what some coaches do. That's just how they operate sometimes. He can be intense sometimes. Get guys fired up in a way. Mm-hmm. How does he treat the quarterbacks? Is there a double standard?
Oh.
I'm not implying anything. I'm just it just made me wonder. Like,
sure.
Would he get after an Avery Johnson like he would a Cooper Beebe or any other of the offensive linemen, you know? It's just a thought. May not mean anything. Just a thought. All right, that'll do it for Avery Johnson. That'll do it for spring football. Spring football, guys, in the books, the 15 practices over as of Saturday. There's a lot of people at the indoor facility on Saturday. A lot of parents in town. Saw a lot of players as well. Skylar Thompson was in the house. Deuce Vaughn was in the house. Ben Sinnott was there as well. Skylar Thompson had his annual fundraiser this past weekend. Mm. So... didn't get a chance to talk to any of them, but it was cool to see him back in town. We'll take a timeout, a little baseball, when we come back. Man, you're really digging into the beds today. This has to be a JK bed.
Nope.
No?
Stephen Schaefer.
Oh, okay. I can see this. Yeah, this is definitely a big Steve song, too. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people that left a bunch of music in there. All right, Batcats did not have a good weekend, guys. Did not have a good weekend. Boys, Norman, Oklahoma has just been the house of pain for K-State baseball for decades now. I don't think – AJ, when did you say the last time the Cats won a series in Norman? What year was that?
1971. That was so long ago, we were still on the gold standard.
It's a valid point. 1971 means that it was a few months before I was born.
I was about to ask that. Were you even born yet, Troy?
Yeah, no, August 71.
It's been a minute.
I wasn't.
The Cats are now 21-13. The record now 7-8 in the Big 12 as they were swept by the Oklahoma Sooners. Obviously, what stands out if you were paying attention to the series was that the pitching did not do so hot. The team finished with an ERA this weekend of 9.49. Oklahoma's ERA was an even 500. This past weekend, K-State was outscored 31-16. And also, K-State was outhit 37-26. And Oklahoma doubled up on extra base hits 16. Check that. Let me double check this, make sure I have it right here. Yes, that's right. They did double up 18-9 on extra base hits.
Just frustrating, I know, for Pete Hughes because he talked about even just what it was 2 years ago going down there and getting beaten the way that they did. And the sad part about that, if you're a K-State fan, is you're not going to get another crack at him anytime soon in Norman.
Nope. The rivalry is going to be done for some time. I think Texas might be on the non-con. I can't remember. I thought I heard something about that.
It Oklahoma's, is.
Texas is on next year's non-con.
It's a one game. Matt mentioned it a bunch on one game. They're playing one game, just non-con.
Okay. Cats offensively hit 245. K-State just played in a deficit for the whole weekend.
Yes.
And both Saturday and Sunday, giving up 6-run innings did not help. It just one inning each game, it really started to snowball. And then K-State was trying to come back from behind and try to go win a game. Well, Saturday and Sunday, a very valiant effort. And Sunday, they tied it up. They got the game even. And then, unfortunately, a fielding mistake in the eighth inning by Brady Day that just does not happen very often. A fielding mistake, which was counted as a hit. It should have been an error after seeing the replay. And then the Sooners walked it off in the ninth inning on Sunday off of off Tyson Neighbors.
What killed them this weekend was the long ball. I mean, OU, I don't know if you mentioned it, they hit a ton of home runs.
They had five. Yeah, they had five. K-State with a couple of them. Chuck Ingram had the tying home run top of the ninth yesterday to send it to the bottom of the ninth.
And the fielding mistakes, too, killed them.
Three errors on K-State, one. It should have been four. And one in Oklahoma. Yeah, it was just a really rough weekend. And it was an important series because K-State was just a game back in the Big 12. Just one game back, and now they're back four.
Yeah, and below 500 for the first time all season in conference play.
Yeah, they're 7-8. Right now, top of the leaderboard in the Big 12, West Virginia and Oklahoma at 11-4. Oklahoma State, who comes in town this weekend, is 10-5. Big opportunity to get some games back and still play a very good team in the Big 12, who's probably going to be, like they do every year, hosting a regional.
Went from 6-1 in the conference to 7-8.
Yeah, the Texas series was rough. The UCF series was rough, winning just two games one game in the Texas series, one in the UCF series, and then you get swept by Oklahoma. So, yeah, after that Houston series where they swept the Cougars, and Houston is not very good, things not going in K-State's direction. However, they're middle of the pack in the Big 12, tied with KU and Cincinnati at 7-8. Right now in third place is Oklahoma State, fourth place Texas, fifth is Baylor. So the Bears making a comeback here in the Big 12. And then at 9-9, you have Texas Tech, and then tied for 7-8, middle of the pack, K-State, KU in Cincinnati. So when you're at home, you need to win two out of three. That's where K-State's at right now. They need some wins, and they need them badly to stay in the hunt. And I mean, and right now, I mean, RPI, well, I haven't looked at the RPI today, but I mean, heading even into Sunday, K-State was still in a really good spot, probably a two seed in the NCAA tournament, but when you get swept, and now they got some important games coming up because they got UConn tomorrow, Northeastern on Wednesday. They're both on the road. A pretty solid opportunity to go pick up some big and needed road victories for the Cats now that road play isn't going too well right now. Let's get an update on when those games do start. So it's kind of odd times, but we'll have them both here on K-Man. With Brian Smoller on the broadcast, the game tomorrow in Storrs, Connecticut, Elliott Ballpark against UConn, first pitch at 5:05, so pregame at 4:30. And then the Northeastern matchup there from Brookline, Massachusetts, will have first pitch at 1 o'clock Central and Wednesday's pregame at 12:30. Wrap up Wildcat Insider next. All right, let's wrap up Wildcat Insider. Before we go, Troy, we need to mention that tonight potentially we could get some serious severe weather in our area, and of course here on K-Man and all of our other stations, we're going to bring you the best coverage you'll find with our severe weather coverage. So as soon as it kicks off, and the times have been changing a little bit, but potentially the heaviest time for severe weather could come between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m., but it definitely happened before and after. So it's a pretty wide window right now. I mean, it could start as of now through 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Not only that, but yeah, there's the opportunity then for it to redevelop secondarily before we get to sunrise tomorrow morning. So just digging up a map, there is about a 5% chance of tornadic activity that could develop with these storms as they move through the area tonight. That was according to the National Weather Service and the Storm Prediction Center. So, yeah, when a friend of mine was looking at that map earlier today and we in the Midwest were discussing this going, yeah, that's going to be an ugly night.
So, I mean, in Nebraska, around the Omaha area and to the east, to the north, like they have a bunch of warnings right now. Right now for our area, there's no watches yet or anything. But we do project it happening at some point. But you know, there has been a heads up multiple times by the National Weather Service leading up to tonight that it can get quite nasty tonight. It does have the potential of getting pretty nasty tonight with severe weather. So we'll keep an eye on all that. Wanted to mention as well, K-State Soccer has announced its schedule, their regular season schedule for this upcoming season, which will kick off with an exhibition at Missouri State on August 3rd. The home opener in exhibition play is against Arkansas on August 10th. And then the official regular season opener will be at Boozer Family Park the day after my birthday, August 16th, against Boston College. Also on the home non-con schedule will feature Green Bay and South Dakota. Big 12 play opens up hosting Colorado on September 12th. Also in Big 12 play at home, K-State will host Texas Tech, UCF, Utah, BYU, and KU. So the Jayhawks will come here for Senior Day on October 25th. And, of course, the Big 12 tournament returns to Kansas City this year beginning on October 30th. That's going to do it for Wildcat Insider. We'll have one more Wildcat Insider a week from today. And Wyatt Thompson will be here. He'll talk all about his experience calling some Royals baseball this past weekend. And we'll also look back at what was K-State sports for this calendar year as we wrap up Wildcat Insider next week. That'll do it for AJ Shaw, Troy Coverdale. I'm Mitch Fortner. Royals baseball is coming up next. Thank you for listening to Wildcat Insider on News Radio KMAN.
Getting you closer to the locker room than anyone else.